You know, in view of today's onslaught of news, I think the usual opening monologue is kind of insufficient. So instead, I've come up with a selection of alternative responses. These include flabbergasted stammering, gobsmacked stuttering, wide-eyed, tongue-hanging-out drooling, followed by fear-induced teeth chattering, and then convulsions causing me to fall over sideways and curl up into the fetal position while sucking my thumb and whimpering. Or I could simply rely on weeping quietly, slowly devolving into hysterical sobbing, followed by whining, followed by the end of the American Republic, followed by the death of Western civilization, followed by our happy-go-lucky theme song. Yeah, I think I'll go with that last one. I'm Andrew Klavan, and this is The Andrew Klavan Show.
I feel hunky-dunky, life is tickety-boo. Birds are winging, also singing hunky-dunky-dee-doo. Ship-shaped, dipsy-topsy, the world is zippity-zing. It's a wonderful day, hurrah, hooray, it makes me want to sing. Oh, hurrah, hooray. Oh, hooray, hurrah.
Hooray, hurrah, it's an incredibly crappy news day. I was thinking of just coming in just staring wide-eyed, depressed into the camera for 30 minutes, but we can't do that. We've got cardiologist Dr. Michael Akkad was going to discuss the future of healthcare, assuming there is a future, which is probably going too far. And first, you know, in my my copious spare time, what I call my copious spare time, which is actually my other profession, I'm coming to the end of writing a novel, and so this incredible news onslaught, and the fact when you come to the end of writing a novel, it is just an incredible amount of mental labor. I do believe it is the hardest work there is. And because the business has changed so much, I've been thinking of all these alternative ways of releasing this novel, because I feel like publishing is a dying business. I feel like old-fashioned way of releasing novels that you don't get to the people you want to get to. So I've been using this sponsor that we have, Skillshare, and I've been looking up their various different ways that, you know, they, what they have. What it is it's basically a website that has all these instructional videos and all kinds of subjects, from things that you would use in business to things that you would just do as a hobby. And some of them are for writers. So I downloaded things that were for writers that were about like marketing, new ways of publishing and all this. And it really is good. They're very short. You know, they're short. Each video is kind of short, like maybe 10 to 15 minutes. But then you're getting like 2 weeks of videos. So it's like an instructional class. And if you're thinking of changing jobs or just doing what I'm doing, kind of innovating in your job, or just want to look up a new, learn new things, learn a new hobby, it really is a very cool place to go. It's basically just this huge online learning community, I guess you'd call it, and anything from social media marketing, which is something I have to learn about, logo design, street photography, and it's unlimited access to all of this for a low monthly price. So you never get into that situation like you get in with those apps, in-app purchases. You never get that. So you're not like in the middle of a class and they go, yes, but if you want to hear the real stuff, you got to pay more. It is one low monthly price and you get it all. There are classes that Adobe, how to use Adobe Illustrator, street photography, email marketing, branding, web design, public speaking, all this sort of stuff. And Skillshare is giving my listeners a month of unlimited access, absolutely free. So you can try it out. You go to www.skillshare.com/Andrew to redeem your free month, www.skillshare.com/Andrew to redeem a month free. Good stuff. Wow. What a really yesterday, it was a bad day, and this is a bad day, I have to say, politically. You know, it used to be, they used to say that the Democrats were the evil party and the Republicans were the stupid party. And now it's like the Democrats are like the satanic party and the Republicans are like the brain dead party. It's like everything has become like more and more what it is. Nothing has changed its nature, but it's just their nature. It's their nature has been pushed to the wildest extreme. So obviously, I'm sure by this time everybody has heard the appointment of Robert Mueller, the former head of the FBI, as a special counsel to investigate all things Russia. And this is the thing I've been saying all this time, that they shouldn't do. I still believe they shouldn't do it. I believe it is. Look, nobody knows the future. So one of the things I'm really against is I'm against despair, and I'm against predictions of disaster that lead to despair. But you can say when you think something is a mistake and think something is going to go wrong. You know, it's not. This has nothing at all to do with Mueller himself. How do you pronounce this? Mueller or Mueller? Is it the Who knows? It's we'll call him Mueller. You know, nobody has anything bad to say about this guy. He was the FBI head for like a week when 9/11 happened. He had just moved in, and 9/11. A lot of people don't know this. 9/11 transformed the FBI, especially, but it transformed all our security services. The FBI was, you know, the J. Edgar Hoover guy who did the federal crime. So if you robbed a bank, that's a federal crime. If you kidnap somebody, that's a federal crime. The FBI came after you, and suddenly, no more. You know, it had to be utterly transformed into the agency that stopped people from killing us in the name of Allah. That is basically what happened. And Mueller was the guy who oversaw that. He apparently did a great job. He was not only the director under Bush, George W. Bush, but Obama asked him to stay on and then asked him to stay on an extra 2 years. So instead of the usual 10-year term, he was in for 12 years. And so it has nothing to do with him. It has to do with the nature of special counsels. I mean, if you remember, Patrick Fitzgerald, same thing. When he was appointed, it was what a wonderful guy he is. You know, all sides, everybody loves him. He was the special counsel who went into the Valerie Plame affair to investigate how Valerie Plame's name was exposed to the press. A completely bogus scandal, in my humble opinion. This was a completely bogus scandal. Valerie Plame's husband wrote a story saying that George W. Bush was wrong about Saddam Hussein trying to get yellow cake. That story was exposed as wrong, and to throw the public off, remember, because they were doing some of the same stuff to W that they're now doing to Trump, to throw the public off the scent, they invented this like baloney scandal about Valerie Plame. Patrick Fitzgerald came in, everybody said, oh, good man, he has integrity. And then Fitzgerald went nuts and he was investigating everything, and it went on and on and on. And in the end, it turned out that the Bush administration had absolutely nothing to do with the exposure of Valerie Plame, and they wound up convicting Scooter Libby for all this crazy, you know, the perjury charges and obstruction of justice, and what sounded really to me like just a mistake he made. It was awful. I mean, Vice President Cheney was furious with Bush that he didn't pardon Scooter Libby. The whole thing was just a disaster. And remember, the Democrats were calling it Fitzmas for Fitzgerald. They were saying Fitzmas is coming when the whole Bush administration is going to be brought down, all the war crimes are going to be exposed and all this stuff. And even though it was disappointing, I can't remember how long it went on, 14 months, something like that. Really long time. Even though the Democrats were disappointed and they didn't get the impeachment and they didn't get the destruction of Bush, they got a lot of distraction. And that, you know, that doesn't happen because of the guy who's in charge, the special counsel who's in charge. It happens because he's got to staff his investigation, right? He's got to staff his investigation. And who comes in to staff his investigation? All these young guns who are hungry to make their name, ambitious and all this stuff. They want a criminal investigation. The president is the biggest target. You know, my instinct, it's only an instinct. Obviously, nobody knows. My instinct is that Trump himself hasn't done anything particularly wrong, especially in this Russia thing. But he can investigate anything he wants. And if you think for a minute that this is going to quiet things down for longer than a day, forget about it. I mean, if you heard the statements that the Democrats were making, this is a good first step. Almost every one of them said this is a good first step. You know, we know what the second step is, tar and feathers, and then they carry you out and throw you in the Potomac. You know, that's the second step. You know, so it's like a good first step. They are never, ever, ever going to let this guy go. And, you know, right now, if you listen to them, they don't want to talk impeachment. They don't want to talk impeachment at all. Why? Because then you have President Pence for 3.5 years, and he'll do, you know, all this hysteria, go away. Here's a guy who's a practice politician. He knows what he's doing. And even conservatives, I've heard them say, you know, they've said it to me, like, well, you know, it wouldn't be so bad if we had, you know, calmed down and all the end of the hysteria. But what's bad about it is letting the deep state and the media and the Democrats win. And I'm going to get back to that in a minute. But, you know, Donald Trump, who just cannot put a sock in it, you know? I mean, it's like he tweets out today, this is the single greatest witch hunt of a politician in American history. You know, all right, with all of the illegal acts that took place in the Clinton campaign and Obama administration, there was never a special counsel appointed. Now, listen, that's absolutely true. It's not true in the Clinton campaign. He's talking about Hillary. But that is absolutely true. Obama, all those scandals, the IRS scandal, no counsel. Fast and Furious, no counsel, you know. And James Comey felt the DOJ, the Department of Justice, wasn't even credible enough during Obama's administration for him to bring the Hillary Clinton investigation to them. That's why he made his famous press conference. That's why he gave it, because he thought that they had blown their credibility. No special counsel. I don't know. Obama could have strangled Michelle on the White House lawn. There would not have been a special counsel investigation. Should Trump be tweeting that? Of course not. Of course not. How do you think Mueller feels when he sees that? I'm being accused of a witch hunt. Is that the way you make friends with the guy who's investigating you? No, of course not. It's a stupid thing to say, but it is true. And I mean, just the whole standard, the whole double standard is infuriating. It makes your eyes bleed, you know. And by the way, at this point, the press and Steve Bannon are as one. Steve Bannon and the press completely agree. Here's what Steve Bannon said at CPAC just a few months ago.
It's not only not going to get better, it's going to get worse every day in the media. And here's why. But by the way, the internal logic makes sense. They're corporatist, globalist media that are adamantly opposed to an economic nationalist agenda like Donald Trump has. President Trump really laid this out, as Ryan said, many years ago at CPAC. It's really CPAC that really originally gave him the springboard. It's the first time at Breitbart we started seeing him and saw how people, his speeches resonated with people. And then he would go out to these smaller town halls later, and really he got traction with the same message he's bringing today. Here's why it's going to get worse, because he's going to continue to press his agenda. And as economic conditions get better, as more jobs get better, they're going to continue to fight. If you think they're going to give you your country back without a fight, you are sadly mistaken. Every day, it is going to be a fight.
Okay. And so if you think they're going to give you your country back without a fight, they're sadly mistaken. Here's Dana Bash on CNN saying essentially the same thing.
Right or wrong, what this president has done in his first 100 plus days, even before he came into office, is picked fights with the intelligence community and now the law enforcement community, particularly the way, never mind that he fired James Comey, but the way in which he did it, not giving him the respect of actually telling him in person, or at least not having him find out from cable news. And so we know that this is, they talk about the deep state. Well, these are communities that have a lot of loyalty within and know how to get back. Even if you're the president of the United States.
So she's saying the same thing. He messed with the deep state, and now the deep state is coming after, and we're going to help them every step of the way. It's like democracy dies in darkness. Democracy dies on CNN. We're watching democracy die in real time on TV. And listen, about Trump, because this is the thing I get all the time whenever I talk about the fact that I think the true danger that we're facing right now is this uprising of the deep state, of these intelligence guys who think it is okay for them to call the New York Times, okay for them to call the Washington Post, because they do not like the president. And a media which says, a news media which says, yeah, that's okay, let's destroy the president. That's great. We don't like him. He's Republican. He's kind of nasty. Let's get him. That to me is the danger that faces our democracy, our American democracy. That's the big danger. But if you want to talk about Trump, the politics is the opposite of wisdom. I'll tell you why politics is the opposite of wisdom. In politics, there's always someone to blame. There's always the assumption that things would go right if people would just do what you think they should do, okay? There's no sense of tragedy, which is where all of wisdom comes from. All of wisdom comes from the fact that there's some things that just don't work out. When Donald Trump was nominated by the Republicans, I was genuinely sad. I was genuinely sorry that happened. I wanted Cruz. I'm an easygoing person. I'm not an ideologue. I would have settled for almost anybody else. Maybe not Kasich, but certainly Rubio. Even Bush, who I really had problems with, would have settled for that. I wanted Cruz. Every single one of those guys, I'm absolutely convinced, would have lost. Every single one of them would have lost. Now, and all these people saying, that as you make more excuses for Trump, you're going to overemphasize the danger that Hillary Clinton actually posed. I call BS. I think it's the other way around. I think they are minimizing. They have forgotten the danger of Obama. They have forgotten how hysterical they were. I'm talking about conservatives now. They have forgotten how hysterical they were about Obama and Clinton coming in and sealing his agenda and all this stuff and making it permanent. all of that stuff we dodged because of Donald Trump, who was the only person, you know, who had the moxie kind of to destroy her, to take her on, to wrong foot the media, to use the media by being basically a reality TV star and all this. And all of that entailed these massive, massive character flaws that he had. So this is what I'm talking about, tragedy. The very fact that he was the only one who could defeat her included the fact that he had these bullying tactics, this absolute mastery of the media in chaos, you know, way of creating chaos that the media had to cover. It was as if the people of America, so forgotten, so frustrated, so out of work, so desperate that they're killing themselves with OxyContin, called out to them the culture to produce the man they needed. And the culture, which once would have produced an Andrew Jackson or even an Abe Lincoln, the culture cannot produce anything else but a Donald Trump. And that's on the left too, because who turned our culture into this trash? Who turned our culture into this, you know, pornographic, stupid, ugly, empty traditionalist class? I'm telling you, like, the left is like, it's like cancer. It is, you know. And I'm not one of these guys who says, oh, Obama was evil. You've never heard me say that. I've said the opposite. Obama's not evil. His philosophy is cancer. You know, Nancy Pelosi's not an evil person. Her philosophy is a cancer. These guys want to kill babies. They want to kill tradition. They want to kill gender. They want to kill free speech. They want to kill religion. And then the world will all be fair. You know, then it's all going to be great after that. So, you know, you say to me, well, you're fighting with this horribly flawed weapon. And I say to you, I would fight them with a stick. I would fight them with a handful of dirt. If the left sinks the ship of freedom into the tar pit of their stupid socialism, the last thing you see as it goes down will be my fist, because I don't care. You can say Trump is going to end up in disaster. He's all we've got. You know, he is all we've got. And this system that is this electoral system, the people, the guy who the people voted in, is all we've got. And they are, and the hysteria machine won. They did that thing. They did that thing they always do, where they hit us with one story after another. And as each story began to fade, they hit us with another one. The firing of Comey was legal, but oh, it was to stop the Russian investigation. Oh, wait, no, that's not true. You know, the leak to the Russians, but it's too late, because now we're talking about the leak to the Russians of classified information. Oh, that was no worse than anything Obama did. Yeah, but it's too late. Now we're talking about the Comey memos. And speaking of these Comey memos, by the way, these Comey memos that were taken by a guy who says he interviewed Hillary Clinton. He interviewed Hillary Clinton on the email scandal and didn't take any notes. He didn't take any notes, right? So, but he took notes every time he sat and talked to Trump. So that's suggestive too. But I just want to say that during his last testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee, the senator from Hawaii, Mazie Hirono, said to him, if the attorney general or senior officials at the Department of Justice opposes a specific investigation, can they halt that FBI investigation? And Comey said, in theory, yes. And she says, has it happened? And he says, not in my experience, because it would be a big deal to tell the FBI to stop doing something that without an appropriate purpose. I mean, where sometimes they give us opinions that we don't see a case there, or so you ought to stop investing resources in it. But I'm talking about a situation where we were told to stop something for a political reason. That would be a very big deal. It's not happened in my experience. Okay, that's what Comey said. So it's another, you know, it's another nothing. And so you can blame Trump for this, and Trump made so many mistakes. And truly, 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 take that phone away from him. You know, it's blowing him up. But still, if I had to pick up Trump, if I have to pick up a broken vessel and just hurl it at these people, I would do it. I would still do it. And so, you know, we're staying on Facebook because we want you to get to hear Dr. Michael Akkad and talk about the future of healthcare. But I do have to talk just for a minute about the death of Roger Ailes. So I'm so ticked off at this point. The death of Roger Ailes. You know, There's so much stuff to say about this, but I am not going to be solemn or somber about it. I didn't know the man. I had no experience of him whatsoever. So I'm not going to, you know, there are people like Rush Limbaugh who can talk about him personally. I can't do that. I don't even want to talk about the left's hateful tweets that they're putting out. And it wouldn't bother me if it were just, you can always find somebody on Twitter to say something hateful, but it really is people who should know better, people from Politico, people from you know, Mark Lamont Hill, you know, saying, you know, Roger Ailes has died. Wow. Sending deep and heartfelt condolences to everyone who was abused, harassed, exploited, and unjustly fired by him. All this stuff. You know, the only thing he means to me is Fox News, that he built this incredible enterprise that was so powerful that the Barack Obama, who was never touched by the press, never asked a hard question, never exposed, never investigated, never wrong-footed by a supine media, all he did was spend 8 years complaining about Roger, what this thing that Roger Ailes created. That thing now is on the ropes, and this is the other reason it's a bad day. You know, the firing of Bill O'Reilly, again, may have been his fault, but as I said at the time, the problem is not the firing of Bill O'Reilly or the firing of Roger Ailes. It is that the will to continue a conservative voice in the media is gone out of the Murdoch family, out of the young versions of the Murdoch family. You know, Rupert Murdoch, this may come as a surprise to him. He can't live forever. When he goes, there is no will to keep this going. And there's no will on the rest of the conservative media to replace this, to compete with it, to compete with the endless stream of comedians hitting Trump, the stuff that creates the atmosphere that the media has used to gin up this hysteria. There is nothing to compete with them. And that is why, you know, that's why Roger Ailes' death is, for me, is symbolic of something that's happening, symbolic of the fact that we're losing a major, major voice and that we've done nothing to replace it. I don't mean to be depressing. It's kind of a bum day, you know. I don't want to put lipstick on a pig either. You know, it's kind of a bum day. The reason I'm saying the special counsel is a bum thing is I just think it's going to blow up in Trump's face, but maybe not. Look, maybe, you know, he'll come in and say, you know, Mueller will come and say, well, there's nothing on Trump. But some of this stuff about Obama spying on Trump, you know, would be, so we can dream, can't we? Do we have Dr. Akkad?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about this because at least we can come up with some ideas as we are conservatives. Dr. Michael Akkad is a cardiologist and internal medicine specialist in San Francisco. He offers individualized care in a free market setting. And he writes a lot about this free market. He's the author of Moving Mountains, A Socratic Challenge to the Theory and Practice of Population Medicine. You can find him on Twitter at Michael Akkad, and Michael is spelled MichaelAccad. We've been having trouble with our internet, so we're not going to bring him on Skype. Is that basically it? So we'll have him on the phone, and we have a picture of him. So you can look at the picture of him while we talk on the phone. Dr. Akkad, you there?
Thank you for having me on, Drew.
It's a pleasure. It's nice to talk to you. Let's start with this. What do you think of where the House is going with the repeal of Obamacare? Let's start with that. Is there anything hopeful you see in this, or is it so far kind of not where you want to see us going?
You know, there may be a little bit of glimmers of little hopes here and there in some aspects of the law, but I'm so hopeful about the future of healthcare. In general, and it has nothing to do with D.C. I really don't pay too much attention to what's happening with that.
But you're hopeful about it.
You know, I'm hopeful we will eventually have, believe it or not, universal healthcare, and we will have it when the whole government-run healthcare collapses.
Okay.
We realize how much things are making more, you know, are much more expensive when they're coming out of D.C. And so there's the beginning of a movement right now that is extremely dynamic and very hopeful among doctors and patients who are saying enough is enough. And okay, we're paying taxes. Okay, we're forced to pay huge premiums that give us nothing, you know, in terms of health insurance. But for many things, we can find very affordable, very high quality healthcare just by circumventing the system, by dealing directly with one another, doctors and surgical centers taking care of patients directly on a cash basis, and it's working very well. And it's really taken off like wildfire in certain areas, not everywhere, of course, but in certain areas.
Well, wait, now you're talking about, no insurance companies. Am I getting
correct?
That right? No insurance, a cash basis. You're talking about going to doctors, you know, respectable, real doctors. This is not black market medicine, right? And you're talking about paying them cash directly.
Absolutely.
And what is that?
Now, I'm not.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm not advising for people not to have any insurance at all. I mean, I think right now, if hospital care is so expensive that I think it's advisable for people to have some kind of coverage. It actually doesn't have to be insurance. There's a growing movement. You may have heard of cost-sharing ministries. These are faith-based cooperatives of people who get together and agree to help each other pay medical bills. And it's purely on a voluntary basis, faith-based, and it's working very well for, you know, large ticket items like a hospitalization.
Yes,
but
I have.
At any rate, outside of you know, so people ought to have some kind of coverage of that sort. But otherwise, for regular, you know, day-to-day medical care, especially primary care, but also some outpatient surgery, you can have excellent care if you pay cash. When people have high deductibles on their insurance, they're better off paying cash, not using the insurance, and having really outstanding care in that way. And that's really a growing movement, and I think it's going to keep growing because, you know, as the system gets worse and worse and more congested, you know, people are recognizing that they're not they're paying a lot of money, they're paying a lot of taxes, they're not getting anything out of it, so may as well write it off as a loss.
So,
and then if you, yes, go ahead.
So will this system attract good doctors? I mean, will I be able to find a really top-notch doctor in a system like this?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it attracts the doctors not only who are good, but who are willing to do what's right for the patient. Because most doctors who do this are actually doing this at a financial risk.
Yeah.
It's a lot safer to stay within the system. It's a lot safer to be on a panel, on a network, on an insurance network, or to get money from Medicare and things like that. It's a lot safer. But it puts you, as a doctor, it puts you in a conflict of interest. If you get paid by the insurance, then really all you are is you're acting as a subcontractor for the insurance company.
Right, right.
Or as a subcontractor for the government. So if you want to do right for the patient, you need to be paid by the patient. That way you're accountable to the patient.
So now,
I think you will get the best doctors in that system.
So now, to bring up the poor, I mean, what always happens is the news guys, you know, bring out somebody who can't afford health care. His kid gets sick. Maybe he's irresponsible, but now we've got a sick child on our hands. How does this system serve him?
It can serve it very well. I mean, I'm talking really about for primary care. It can be very affordable, and there are many people who practice direct primary care in poor rural areas that are able to take care of people with very low income and so forth. I'm not saying it's perfect, mm-hmm. because the fact of the matter is we are working in an environment that is where there's a lot of government intervention and regulations that inevitably make things a lot more expensive than they ought to be. But nevertheless, there is care available. It's not for everything. Obviously, if you have a child who is really sick, who needs to be hospitalized, he needs to get hospitalized. If they don't have insurance, eventually the state will pick up the bill, you know, through Medi-Cal programs and things
right.
like that. So there is right now a safety net for kids. The people who are hurt the most are, you know, middle-class people who are self-employed or are not getting their benefits from their employers, and they need to buy insurance at a very, very high cost.
So
they're not getting much out of that.
You have written that people are obviously always talking about the death spiral of Obamacare, but you have said the whole health system is in a death spiral. So what you're basically saying is, no matter what the House does, no matter what the Senate produces, this movement that you see coming is going to continue no matter what.
Correct. Now, the House, the government could help this movement by deregulating to some extent, to as large an extent as they can. I mean, I'd be happy if they deregulated totally and got out of it altogether. But they can facilitate things. For example, right now, if a person wants to join a direct primary care practice, the direct primary care practice typically work on a membership fee where you pay, you know, somewhere between $50 to $100 a month, and you have access to your doctor 24/7. It's a very personalized service. The doctors will provide you medication at a discount and lab tests at a steep discount and do whatever they can to help the patients. Well, the membership fee cannot come out of a health savings account right now by law. So there are proposals to change that and to make to make it so that people can use their health savings accounts to pay for these kinds of memberships. So there are laws that can, you know, the laws can change. State laws could change to make it easier for new hospitals to be built. You know, more free market based hospitals. I mean, that is possible. So there are ways in which the government can help facilitate the growth of this movement. But the movement will continue to grow no matter what, because it's so bad within the system that people will seek us out.
So,
you know?
So that's my last question. How do people find this if they want this in their own life? Is there some way to look for it?
There are. I mean, there's a website called DPC. DPC stands for Direct Primary Care. DPC Frontier, one word, dpcfrontier.com. It has a lot of information about this movement. There's another site called the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. That's a pioneering work by an anesthesiologist named Keith Smith in Oklahoma, who does surgery on a cash basis at really tremendous savings. You know, a quarter of the price of what people would pay if they had their surgeries at a hospital. And he has a blog there, and he gives a lot of information. So, people should Google direct care, the direct care movement, and can find a lot of information.
Thank you very much, Dr. Akkad. You know, I didn't mention your own blog, alertandoriented.com. You can find Dr. Akkad also on Twitter at Michael Akkad, MichaelAccad. Thank you very much, Doctor. It's nice to have a hopeful note today.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it. That actually took me by surprise. I was not prepared to say that. He sounded more upbeat than anybody else I've heard about healthcare. But actually, that makes a lot of sense. A couple of small things I want to cover. A lot of people have been writing to me asking why I haven't covered this Seth Rich killing, the DNC guy who was shot down, and I haven't covered it because it didn't pass the smell test for me. That's as simple as that. I mean, I'm perfectly willing to believe that evil Democrats shot the guy down. He was shot down. There was a rumor going around that his computer, not a rumor, a private detective had said that he had been in contact with WikiLeaks, and so creating the impression that maybe he was killed by Hillary Clinton for leaking stuff to WikiLeaks and all this stuff. And I just didn't buy it. First of all, when private detectives come out in public, I always think, what does the private in private detective stand for? You know, it always makes me feel like maybe they're doing something self-aggrandizing. A lot of this has now been blown up. It turns out, the family denies it. The guy was killed in an area where a lot of robberies had been taking place because it was blocked by a construction, so there was no video cameras there and all this. So I just didn't want to go there because I just didn't think it was real. And, people get angry when I say this stuff. I'm not saying there's not a mystery that will be solved there, but I haven't heard anything yet that makes me want to bring this in. You do want to hear a story. Our pal Robert Spencer, who was on this show, did you hear about this? Remember we had Robert Spencer on to talk about? He went to Reykjavik, Iceland to talk about this. And of course, it was a big, all this crazy stuff, what a horrible guy he is for saying that Islam is dangerous. And there was all these protests and the press is covering the protests. And he went out for dinner afterwards. But a lot of people showed up for his speech. And Iceland is a tiny country, so it was actually a big turnout for him. And then he went to a local restaurant with a friend to celebrate his success. And a guy came up to him, a young Icelander, called him by name, shook his hand and said he was a big fan, and then talked to him for a little bit. And then another guy came up to him and likewise called him by name and then cursed him out, said, F you, and walked away. And he got back to his hotel room and he started to get sick. And he realized he'd been poisoned. One of these guys, maybe both of them, had slipped something into his drink, Ritalin mixed with ecstasy. And he was sick for a long time. So the open-minded, tolerant people of the, you wonder why I talk about the left like this and why what I think of them. And this is what I think of them. I mean, I do think that these guys are that bad. And when they do stuff like this, they really do it. And that's why I don't go for the conspiracies, because if you're constantly chasing after conspiracies, real stuff like Robert Spencer getting poisoned, then you've lost your credibility and you can't talk about it anymore. And the last thing I have to end with this, I feel like this is just a bad news day. And what can I say? It's a bad news day. I do have to just talk very briefly. I mean, maybe I should wait until next week. I've started, so I'll finish, as the old British game show used to go. Miss USA and Jimmy Fallon, okay? This is the stuff that is part of this atmosphere that we have no way of fighting back against, okay? This is what we have not built an infrastructure to fight. Miss USA comes out. What's her name again? I can't remember. What's her name? She's like a nuclear scientist.
Look it up.
And she's a nuclear scientist. She's absolutely beautiful. She comes out and they are always asking these political questions. And what, Kara McCullough? Okay, thanks. Kara McCullough. And she's absolutely lovely and obviously very intelligent, probably one of the smartest beauty queens ever. And they ask her about whether she's a feminist, and she says, I'm not a feminist, I'm an equalist. You know, I don't believe in feminism because it seems to me anti-male. So that causes a big fuss. And then she came out and they asked her if healthcare was a right. And this is what she said at the actual contest.
Do you think affordable health care for all U.S. citizens is a right or a privilege, and why?
I'm definitely going to say it's a privilege. As a government employee, I am granted health care. And I see firsthand that for one, to have health care, you need to have jobs.
So she said that. They just hammer, but the left is nothing if not generous. They gave her a chance to recant. Usually you have to do this on your knees with a sign around your neck saying enemy of the revolution, but she was allowed to do it on GMA. So here she is recanting.
I'd like to just take this moment to truly just clarify, because I am a woman, I'm going to own what I said. I am privileged to have health care, and I do believe that it should be a right. I hope and pray moving forward that health care is a right for all worldwide.
And, you know, this is when I think of feminism, I think of bullying young women until they do what you want. I mean, that's always been feminism to me. When people say, are you a feminist? I say, yes, I bully young women until they do what I want, you know, and this is feminism in action. And the other one, of course, is Jimmy Fallon, who is the one guy at late night who does all the Trump jokes and all this stuff, but he's not actually a political guy. He had Donald Trump on and he kidded around with him and mussed his hair, and he has been crucified for this. I mean, just crucified. And now he goes back and he says, oh, you know, if I let anyone down, it hurt my feelings that they didn't like it. I didn't do it to humanize them. He's saying, oh, no, I wouldn't want to humanize a human being. What a terrible thing to, you know, so he has to recant. I did it to minimize him. I didn't think it would be a compliment. I did this thing that it was just kind of to make him, you know, to bring him down. It was to bring him down. He says he's devastated. This wouldn't be happening if these guys had anywhere else to go, if they didn't have. It's not, as I keep saying, it's not only the networks, right, that are all owned and operated by corporations, and big corporations are all going to be leftist because big government and big corporations go hand in hand. That's a good thing for big corporations. All this stuff about helping the little guy, not so. Remember, 95% of profits during the Obama administration went to the top 1% during the Obama administration, okay? Socialism always divides people into two, the powerful and the rich, and the poor. That's the end of socialism, always and forever. It is capitalism that has a striated, you know, stairway where you can keep moving up if it's free market capitalism and not crony capitalism. But we do not build this system for delivering news, for delivering entertainment, for delivering ideas. You know, the other day I was on the exercise machine, Crowder says, never use that. Makes you sound like you're 100 years old. Don't you call it an exercise. It's an elliptical. I was on the elliptical. Usually I hike, but when I can't get out, I use the elliptical. And I watch something on Netflix. And I have found the two greatest shows for making the time pass, because I hate the elliptical and it's the most boring thing in the world. Two greatest shows, Law & Order and Blue Bloods. It's like you watch those two shows, the time just flies by. I don't know what it is. They're better shows. They're shows I like more, that are more involving, but they just don't work on the elliptical. These two shows work on the elliptical. So I'm watching Blue Bloods, and it's an episode about gays and how a gay guy gets, there's a gay bashing in it and all this stuff. And the Tom Selleck plays the police commissioner, and he makes a comment he's sorry he made, and he kind of insults the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church comes in and says, you've got to recant, and he says, I can't recant because I'm tolerant of gays. And Tom Selleck plays a devout Catholic, but he feels that they're behind the times with gays. All these points of view came out. I don't care whether a person's gay or not. I am tolerant of gays. It's the new world, blah, blah, blah. Nobody, and by the way, I'm a liberal on this question. I am. This is the one question where if you started checking boxes, this is the one question where I would be more liberal than conservative. So it's not that I disagreed with them, but nowhere did the Catholics get to make an argument. Nowhere did the Catholics get to come in and say, look, we don't hate people. It's not a hate thing. This is, we feel this is a sacrament, blah, 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 blah. Nothing. And there was a Catholic, an archbishop in the story, but he was not allowed to make his argument. We don't build the structure to make our arguments, to set out our ideas, to bring calm when the media is selling hysteria. We do not do it. And this, days like this, are the result. We do not play the long game. It's always hysteria. It's always an emergency. It's always the next big thing. You know, it's Trump, Trump, Trump. Whatever it is, whatever is the thing that's going on today, we do not build the structure that we need. We got to start or we're going to lose the country. And it's, you know, it's close. It's very, very close. I hate to leave you with that, but I'm sending you in to the Clavenless weekend on a Clavenless end of a Clavenless of a Claven week. You know, what can I say? It's just things don't always go the way you think they ought to go. And that's life. Hey, you know, it's in God's hands. It will all will be well and all manner of things will be well. I'm going to end with a song from the 1950s. I love this song. And the guy who sings it has just been utterly forgotten. The song's called Goodnight, My Love. Has anybody heard this before?
Nope.
See, nobody's heard. 1956. And it was originally recorded by this guy, Jesse Belvin. You listen to his voice. He has such a good voice. And the piano on the cut is Barry White, who I don't know if people know anymore, but he must have had 100 gold records. I mean, he was one of the biggest funk and soul singers ever, Barry White. So he's the piano on the piece. But it's just a beautiful little song. Good night, my love. We extend this to the nation as it sinks into the eternal, the semi-eternal darkness of the Clavenless weekend. Survivors will gather here on Monday, and we will move forward. We have great guests, more to say. I'm Andrew Claven. This is The Andrew Claven Show. Stay alive. Come back.
Good night, my love. Pleasant dreams and sleep tight, my love. May tomorrow be sunny and bright and bring you closer to me. One thing I'd like to know, is your love still warm for me, or has it grown cold? If you should awake in the still of night, please have